Hello and welcome everyone to Current Events, the podcast about what two random people on the internet are watching on television. And right now that's science fiction TV in the name of Star Trek Discovery. Science Trek was the original name. Few people know that. So we're watching season one of Star Trek Discovery. I'm Jake McMillan, and joining me today is my good friend Mike Slocum. Say hi, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Okay, yeah, so as I said out of turn, we're watching the first season of Star Trek Discovery. We are now on episode 6, and I got to say that I did not enjoy this episode.
This was Lethe, right?
Yes. Lethe. And so we're going to try a new format tonight. We're constantly experimenting with the form to produce a better product. And a little bit worried that going beat by beat was taking a little bit long and kind of slowing the podcast down. So just assuming that all of our listeners have actually watched the episode, because spoilers, we're just going to recap it real quick and then talk about our favorite or most important scenes. Mm-hmm. And then we will just do some afterthoughts. And that'll be it. Okay. Yeah.
So ready for our IMDb recap?
IMDb recap, fire.
Okay, this was rated a 7.2 by almost 4,000 people. So interesting. The USS Discovery crew is intrigued by a new addition, Lieutenant Ash Tyler. Mm. Sarek seeks Burnham's help, rekindling memories from her past, and Admiral Cromwell questions Lorca's tactics. So,
to say the least, and that would be the least.
Yes, that's pretty much as minimal as you can get for this episode.
Yes, so, you know, the high points are basically that the Admiral shows up and to call Lorca on the carpet, mm-hmm. and essentially, after having sex with him, talk him into resigning his commission.
Yes, or telling them that they're going to figure out how to make him resign his commission. Yeah,
it was very weird the way that played out. And then basically what happens is, so it's a little bit complicated because what happened was Sarek was going on a diplomatic mission to meet with two houses of the Klingon Empire who say that they wanted to break away and join forces with the Federation, which we all knew was BS.
Yeah.
But a traitor, fanatic, which sounds very weird to me because logic really dictates that fanaticism is not
useful.
Yeah, not useful. But anyway, set himself on fire. Well, blew himself up, essentially, inside Sarek's shuttle.
Injected himself with some chemical that caused explosions when mixed with, I don't know, some oxygenated Klingon blood, I guess.
Yeah, who knows? Whatever. He blew up inside the shuttle or the runabout or whatever it is that Sarek was piloting, which then knocked Sarek near to death and sent the ship just drifting.
Yes.
And Burnham, because she's linked by his, what is it, Katra?
Katra, yeah. Yes.
Basically, you know, got an SOS message and tried to mind meld over space with him. But he kept rejecting her from, I guess, what are his last thoughts.
Yes, his failure with her.
We don't know that. What we know is it's his last thoughts, and basically it appears to her that he's ruminating on her failure.
Yes.
Right.
At first, yes.
And that's kind of a big deal because they keep going back to it. What she's trying to do is to reach him through the quartet. No, not Katra. That's Stephen King. The Katra. Sorry. Through the Katra so that she can tell him to turn on his SOS
distress
signals so they can find
distress
him.
Distress locator,
yes. Yeah, because he's in some sort of, you know, space junkyard or something. And
he's in a nebula. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in a nebula. And but he won't let her in to his mind because it turns out later that he's embarrassed. Mm-hmm. About his failure to her because he chose Spock. over her.
Yes, to go into the Vulcan Expeditionary Force.
And then Spock gave a big middle finger to that idea and joined the Federation anyway.
That's right.
I mean, joined Starfleet anyway, right? So that's a funny little twist I liked. Yes. Yeah, so Sarek is kind of screwed on both sins.
Yeah.
He
screws his ward, and then his son screws him. Yeah, so he's double screwed. Yeah, it was.
So it was pretty bad, and so she has to kind of fight her way through his resistance to facing the truth of what happened that day. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, she finds out that he passed her over for Spock. And, you know, then it wasn't her failure he was ruminating on, but his own.
Yep.
And then he does turn on his distress signal, and they're able to find him and rescue him. But he is too ill to make it to the diplomatic mission. And Lorca does something that we're going to be talking about for a while. Mm-hmm. He immediately says, "Oh, you know who could make it? The admiral who wants to have me fired."
Yes.
And I mean, let's be honest, you and I and everyone else who heard about this knew that this was a trap.
Yes. Yeah.
And he had to figure, and my note on this was, okay, is this just a delaying tactic for him? Send her on this mission so he can think of what he can do next? Or is he literally sacrificing her to protect his own career?
Yeah. And either way, in the end, when she gets captured, he does. He parrots her lines back to him, is that the Discovery's mission is more important than any single rescue attempt. So they don't go get her. Even though he normally would have, you know, for anybody else, he would
have. And Saru calls him out on it. He says, "Wait, what now?" Every other time this situation has come up, you've risked the ship to achieve the objective, and now you're just going to let an admiral be taken hostage?
Yep.
And he's like, "Hey, I don't make the rules, pal."
That's right. I was told by this admiral.
Yeah, this very admiral. I'm not supposed to do it. So just call Starfleet, let them know what happened. Send him a letter.
Send a letter. Have him get back to me on that.
Yeah.
And so, he takes full advantage, regardless of whether it was intentional or not. When it happens, he takes advantage of it.
Yeah. So let me ask you straight up, did you like this episode? Would you have given it a 7.2?
No, I wouldn't have. But I thought it was okay. There were several scenes that I did like. I was entertained by it. And to be honest, knowing how things go, it is an important bridge in several spots.
Okay.
And one of the scenes that is a bridge is, and my second favorite scene. We'll talk about my first in a minute. Oh, I'll talk about my first because it's first. Chronologically, I really like the scene between Michael Burnham and Tilly running.
That was good.
That was good. Yeah. It's like, I'm smart. I have a great personality. I don't need to be fit. And Michael Burnham says something, and Tilly comes back with something to the effect of, "Well, that's what people who don't have a personality would say."
Right. And personality doesn't count towards promotion. That's what people who don't have a personality. Not that you don't have a personality.
No, yes.
Even though that's exactly what I was thinking when I said that.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, but their dynamic is excellent, because I am growing a little bit disinterested in Burnham.
Ah, yes.
She's a kind of a one-note character at this point, and the actress is playing it with a kind of a deadpan attitude. I guess that she's aping the Vulcan, type thing. But she betrays her Vulcan training so often with her emotional responses that she's not paying off for me, right?
Yep.
Who am I interested in? I'm interested in Lorca and Stamets and Tilly, mm-hmm. basically all the other characters around her.
Yes.
Ash Tyler is an interesting character for me because I just know he's a traitor.
Yeah.
And so every attempt by the writers to get me to bond with him, I resist.
Yes. Well, and that's what one of my favorite scenes is, the simulator scene where Lorca and Ash are going through a practice, thing. Lorca's digging for Ash's backstory. He's looking for holes.
Right.
He's trying to Seattle and calling him out on it. And what's important here is that Lorca is, while he's bringing him in, he also has this, he also is somewhat concerned about Ash's loyalty
his bona fides.
It's like Lorca wants him, but he makes this great comment about, I want my chief of security shooting better than me. Mm-hmm. And I really like it because you fight like a Klingon.
Yes.
Okay. And this is key.
Well, actually, he didn't say that. Who did say that?
Somebody said it
was Burnham. Burnham said, you fight like a Klingon.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Yes. Well, yeah. he was in the presence of Klingons for a long time. Uh-huh. And so anyway, this is one of the key bridges to the future.
Guess at this point is they're holding someone Tyler cares for hostage to get his cooperation. Now, don't say anything.
I'm not going to.
It's like I said, I've not seen this, but the minute they escaped that prison ship, I knew that that was a phony escape. I knew that had been set up. The thing that makes me say that about him is not being, let's say, a willing traitor, is the way that he attacked Carla. No, what was her name? The captain of the...
Carell,
that's right. Carell. Yes. The way that he attacked her when he had a chance, but he really let her have it. So there's a lot of emotion there, so I'm just assuming that they're doing to him what they did to Dr. whatever his name is in Dune, and turning him. So,
yes. Interesting. Okay. Interesting. Cool. Well, we will see how this plays out.
So,
That's an important scene. And that we've discovered that, Ash is questionable. Lorca has some questionable motives in here. Mm-hmm. Another key. So then we get the whole Sarek thread. That's all good and everything. We get the backstory of, that's interesting, but not particularly.
I didn't find it particularly interesting either. And one of the notes I have is that I don't like the Katra, the whole Katra thing. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel Star Trek. It doesn't feel Vulcan. And it just, to me, it feels like somebody was, I miss Star Wars.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, it's been part of Star Trek for a long time.
I know that they made it up, like you told me that they made it up for the movie to Spock to be able to be lost and found again. But that doesn't make it any better to me. They're just really trying to reach something like spiritual, like the Force, One of the things that I am kind of protective of is I really want to keep my Star Wars separate from my Star Trek.
I certainly get that. Yeah. But so, another key point here, and another of the interesting things is when the Admiral and Lorca have let down, she's acting sort of like a psychoanalyst.
Yes, and apparently she is one.
Yes. But she says, do you remember that meteor shower we saw when we were, back in the day, back when they were probably dating or something during Academy or whatever?
Yeah.
Lorca says, no, I don't. But then just so much has been going on. And she says, ever since the Baran, that ship that he lost, he's just changed. Basically, she comes down to the we can't leave Starfleet's most powerful weapon in the hands of a damaged man, which is where he gets eventually to the point we already talked about, which is
he throws
her under the bus.
I missed the part where he said he doesn't remember the Perseid meteor shower.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
He waves it away, it's been so long, so much has happened.
So now the question is, how did he escape the Baran?
Yes.
Why is he the only survivor of his own ship when he was the captain?
Yep. Yes, and so this is also another bridge to the future episodes, another foreshadowing. So I will just leave that hook in there, is that this is important.
Cool.
So they're actually, you know, so the writers actually do have an arc thing going on here, and they're leaving little hints that you will eventually pick up later.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I noticed that Stamets is a whole new person.
Oh yeah. He's after his revelation in the mycelial network, it's like, yeah, he's like, oh, this is cool. Oh yeah, let's hook you up and make an amplifier to amplify your Katra, and you can, like, you know, do all this cool stuff. And yeah, let's.
Yeah, he's like, it's like he took like mushrooms or LSD for the first time.
Like he took mushrooms or something.
Oh, mushrooms! I didn't think about that. It's funny, yeah. But yeah, he is someone who has had an experience that has changed his consciousness. Is what this looks like, unless. It's not him.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because at this point now I'm starting to look at everybody and go, wait, who are they really?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we should be. We should. Yeah. That's one of the important things here, is we need to start questioning everybody.
Yeah. Because, that's good.
Yeah. Because everybody is, almost everybody is not who they seem.
Interesting. Yeah. So okay.
Any more recap
comments, or should we move on?
The only other thing. I guess the three big threads that were in this episode, which was nice. There were sort of three threads running, which was good, as opposed to like the one thread, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. We had the Sarek Michael Burnham thread, we had the Tilly and Michael Burnham thread, and we had the Lorca and Admiral thread. Actually, Ash had a sort of a sub thread in there too. So there was lots of nice. That's the thing I liked about this episode, is there was lots of parallel things going on, and all of them leaving loose ends for later.
Interesting. Maybe the episode was too busy. I don't know. Maybe I'm just so turned off by the Katra stuff that I kind of disengaged. Not really sure. I just never got going with this episode, which I have with previous episodes.
Yep.
So not really sure. We're gonna have to see what happens in the next one. It's interesting that they have put in this concept of the logic fanatics.
Oh yes.
Right. Yeah. So this is something interesting, and to me that's an interesting development, because the Vulcans are always portrayed as this monolithic society. They all think the same. There's no real dissent or anything, right? Mm-hmm. Which just doesn't seem right for a fairly advanced race. Yeah. So now we see, well, there is a fissure there that has divided, you know, these people who, and basically they don't want humans.
Yeah. There's actually sort of two fissures. There's the mainstream Vulcans, there's these logic fanatics, and there's Sarek, who is trying to understand humans. He's going way out of his way to, like, you know, have a half-human child, foster a human, and that causes conflict with just the main the main Vulcan hierarchy anyway. When they said, look, you can submit one of your two human experiments for consideration to the Vulcan
Expeditionary Force.
But not both.
That's interesting. There's a little bit of trepidation on the part of the mainstream Vulcans to embrace humanity too.
Yes. Yep. And but the fanatics are just the other extreme of that. They're basically the extreme opposite of Sarek. For me, it's that I think that they have somehow bought into the logic that, you know, that all sort of factions who think they are superior to everyone else. It's like, clearly, it is clearly logical that because we are superior, we should, you know, do X, whatever. So from their point of view, I think, you know, you could sort of, maybe you could stretch this to say, yeah, they're actually being, in their minds, very logical and very measured about what it is that, you know, we got to get rid of humans. We can't interact with them. They're inferior.
That really kind of knits itself off of some threads from Enterprise, right? I mean, mm-hmm. for Enterprise was the first time we saw the Vulcans as sort of insufferably superior.
Yes.
Right? And not wanting to contaminate the human race with advanced technology, making them discover everything themselves and, you know, so on and so forth. So that's that's in line with what we already know, and it makes a lot of sense, right? Mm-hmm. Also, you know, this show started in 2017, so, you know, fully you know, a couple of years after this this nativist movement in America had become full throated, you know.
Yep.
And so, you know, it only makes sense for writers in, you know, this milieu to be picking up on that sort of keep
purity.
Us pure, you know, that kind of stuff logic.
Yes.
So it's going to be very interesting, because one of the things that we do know about Sarek from the 2009 reboot is the reason he married his wife is because he loved her.
Yes.
Right. And so for all these other reasons that he says, you know, the truth was that he fell in love with her. And mm-hmm. that means that he has a powerful emotional component.
Yes.
Which we know Spock does too.
Yes.
Right.
And that's why he has this sort of fascination and desire to help humans rise up or integrate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, being the ambassador, it's like ambassadors, a lot of ambassadors sort of get this. They don't go native, but they sympathize with the viewpoint of the people that they are bridging the gap to.
Yeah, because they've seen them, right?
Yes.
When you're
those people, yeah.
Yeah, when you're here in America, all you get is the media, and some of that media is extremely biased against foreigners. Right.
Yes.
And so it's very easy for you to think of Iraqis as not human.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But when you go there, if you allow yourself to be immersed in their culture and to see their lives, and this happened to me when I was sent to Italy for 3 years, you know,
mm-hmm.
you immerse yourself in their culture. Their culture begins to make sense, and they stop being a two-dimensional projection, and you
yes.
begin to understand them as people.
Yep.
Right. And yeah, that's absolutely true. And so if he was the, you know, the ambassador to Earth and began to see, wait, there's an upside to some of this emotional stuff, which is something we knew Spock felt too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He didn't really allow himself to have emotions, but he sometimes counted on Kirk to have them.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was always, that's an interesting dynamic. And they've set this up with, you know, some Vulcans who are, you know, very worried about, you know, if you go back in the history of Vulcan, you know that their turn towards logic came from tremendous suffering from violence and emotional
upheaval.
They actually have stronger emotions than humans
mm-hmm.
do. They just control them. And the reason they control them is their experience was not good.
Yes,
they
know that they can't be trusted with their emotions.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they, you know, it would make perfect sense for a subset of them to think, no, this is not good. We don't want to contaminate ourselves with the very thing that we have fought for centuries to get rid of.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, it's it's interesting. I liked that.
Yes, and that's what I got out of the Sarek thread, is that interesting dynamic of the main lines, Sarek's, you know, far left leaning, and the mm-hmm. fanatics far right leaning, or you know, however you want to characterize that. But anyway, so that's why I like this episode, because I kind of knew where I picked up on all these little things that I didn't pick up the first couple times I saw it, and so it was good for that bridging. But I can see how it would be, if you don't know where it's going, it's kind of, it was just okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I had a little problem with him making Ash Tyler chief of security. And my note was, well, you know, if they're that lax with how they hand out chief of security, well, it's no wonder how Admiral O became head of Starfleet security when she was a mole.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And
Starfleet is far too trusting.
Yes. So what were your favorite scenes?
I've already gone through them. I think the simulation scene, the Admiral and Lorca interacting, and Lorca basically throwing the Admiral under the bus.
Yeah, it's one of these things that happens on television that doesn't happen in real life, right? In real life, you don't go, okay, look, I see what you're doing here. I'm going to go call the police.
Yeah.
Right? You just try to get out of there. And then call the police. You don't tell a man like Lorca, you know, we're going to have to work out how you resigned your commission.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You know, so, yeah, anyway, that was interesting.
And the fact that, and of course, what we discovered at the actual negotiations is that the Klingons were doing this to capture some high value target.
Vulcan
intentionally, but Admiral so much better, in order to get into good favor with the other Klingon houses so that they could join them.
Yeah, and this was actually one of my favorite scenes, was when the betrayal snapped in that last scene with the Admiral. But I did wonder, like how powerful is the race that provided the platform for the meeting, the elders of Citri or whatever they were called, right? You know, it's like generally what you would do is you would have someone very powerful be the honest broker so that nobody would dare betray you. If they're so weak that the Vulcans can murder three of their elders, you know, right there without any blowback, that was a bad choice.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think the Klingons have a much higher opinion of themselves than, you know, may or may not be warranted. But yeah, to me it was like these were it was sort of like the Swiss coming in and saying, well, we'll you know, mediate between these two powers because we're neutral, but they really don't have much authority to enforce anything.
Well, the Swiss will. They will broker, but they won't host. Like when we were hosting the Vietnamese peace talks, we did it in Paris. We did it in NATO, right? So you're not going to try anything in Paris, right?
Yeah.
If the Vietnamese had assassinated the, you know, the American contingent in Paris, then, you know, the whole world would have gone to war against Vietnam.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But apparently not the case here. It is a little disturbing that the Klingons could get away with this so easily. But
yeah, and it was a little disturbing that the Admiral went.
Yes,
well, it was an obvious trap, and you know, sometimes I do question, like, the writers, knowledge of military tactics, you know, because it just seems like this massive power, Starfleet, you know, just blunders into so many problems.
Yeah, well, and then I think they're trying to... their excuse is that Starfleet is always trying to be the do-gooders. Mm-hmm. They're always trying to, you know, we come in peace. And even the Klingons are going, just wait for it. They're going to say it. Here it comes. We come in peace.
Some other races. I think the Federation probably is made up of races that believe in peace. I mean, and the idea of coming in peace really would only be an insult to a warrior culture, right?
Yes.
I'm a little bit conflicted about the holodeck battle, battle simulation.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just, because this show is just so much more militaristic than I'm used Star Trek being.
Right.
So these guys go through battle training like this, close quarters combat training like this, is just new in Star Trek. I mean, they just really haven't done this for a lot because they're not really they're an armed force, but they're not an army, you know.
Yes. Well, you know, the most we got of this in like Star Trek Next Generation was Tasha Yar going in and, you know, sparring with her Holo sensei. That was sort of the extent. And Worf, you know, practicing Tai Chi because, this is a warrior art.
Yeah.
You know, we never got much of the battle. I mean, occasionally he would, you know, go through combat training. What bothered me about this was that it was a holodeck. And this is like pre next generation. It's like the holodeck thing is completely out of the timeline. It's just...
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I know that we didn't, that they didn't show us the holodeck in the original series, but I always just assumed the technology... Was the technology exposed as new in the TNG? In TNG?
Yeah. Or it was fairly new. And they were still discovering things about it and exploring it. So... Mm. This was more like, I mean, they called it a holo simulation.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was more like a VR thing. And, you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, there weren't actual physical.
As a matter of fact, proof of that would be that when Lorca was shot from behind, he didn't feel it. There is a vest that lit up in a certain place.
Oh, that's right. So, it's more like laser tag.
Right, yes. Exactly. Yes. It's just like a really hot game of laser tag.
Yes, yes.
Now, how they created the... Maybe they used the holographic technology to create the corridors and stuff so that they could keep moving and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, anyway, it's that was interesting. But, again, I mean, like, I thought it was a good scene, and it was certainly done well, but I just kept thinking, that's a lot of army in my Star Trek, you know.
Yes, yep.
Ash Tyler, you know, as I've already said, is kind of problematic with me. I liked his bonding with Burnham. Mm-hmm. It needed to be done, and it was done well. And I think that if I was not so suspicious of him, it probably would have affected me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed the scene with Tilly and Burnham running.
Yes, then and the whole thing how it played out, you know, because it came back at the end, and where Burnham basically comes in, it's like, I gave you bad advice. You know, there are a million ways to get to the captain's chair. But Tilly goes, like, no, I'm shaving 6.5 seconds off my run. Bye.
Yeah. She said, choose your own path. And she goes, I already have. Bye. From
bye.
So basically, she definitely likes having Burnham as her mentor. When she introduced Burnham as her mentor, she just lit up. This is my mentor.
Yes.
So that's really good. Really enjoyed Tilly. She's fantastic. And she does have a tendency to bring some character depth out of Burnham.
Yes.
You know, it's like most of the time Burnham is just such a flat character that
like in the cafeteria when, mm-hmm. you know, Tyler or Ash introduces himself and Burnham just kind of looks at him until he kicks her under the table.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, talk to him, you idiot. Yeah. He's hot.
Very fun. So. Very, very good. So she's definitely just very important. Any scene with her is a good one. Lorca being fired by his ex-lover was really weird. I think the only way that they could have done that better was to have them naked. Because it's just so awkward. They just had sex. And she's like, well, that was great. Listen, we're going to have to talk about
phaser on her. You know, she goes like, you're sleeping with a phaser.
Yeah.
The whole.
And so I liked that scene. That was really good. I thought it was a very critical scene. And then the scene with the Admiral being taken hostage was, while it was a fairly obvious payoff, I mean, mm-hmm. there are people who haven't seen this episode who know what it's about, that know that was a trap.
Yes.
But
it's a trap.
But it was well done, and it sets up some repercussions to come.
Yep.
Now the guy in charge of this betrayal is not... what's his name?
Korg?
Volk,
yes.
It's not Volk. This is the guy who betrayed him and
who had the provisions that...
Yeah,
yes.
And so he's now in charge.
Remember, Volk was stranded on the...
right.
On the... And Kal-El basically told him, you know, something about, you know, you're going to have to make sacrifices far beyond what you expect or something.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Are you telling me that the woman who it plays Lady Macbeth to Volk is the same one who was betting Ash Tyler?
Same.
Oh. Well, my goodness. That changes a lot of things, and now her face has been burned.
Yes.
No, that's not good for her because she's a spy and a liar. She doesn't want to stand out. She wants to be the power behind the throne. How interesting. And Voke is just off in her home planet being trained by the matriarchs.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Okay. Oh, man, I did not realize that was her.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah, so she is power hungry.
And now I trust Ash Tyler even less. Uh-huh. Because, yeah, you can really see her machinations unfolding. Yeah, very clever.
Yes. Yep.
One of the things that we talked about last time was the difference between the writing in Discovery and Picard. And we kind of, you know, I came up with some questions about whether J.J. Abrams, you know, and his crew, which is Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman, you know, were maybe a one-trick pony or something. Mm-hmm. But I've tracked all of their writing, not J.J., but the other two's writings. They worked on a lot of shows I really liked, like Fringe. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that's it. It may just be that this is a longer episode or something, or it may really just be not their presence on this show, but a novelist running Picard.
Oh yeah, I think so. I really get the feeling that that's, I mean, you can have great TV writers, but when you get a novelist in there, you just get this longer view of stuff. And things have to tie together.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that things actually are tying together very interestingly. You just don't, you haven't had a chance to
absorb
it all yet.
I am not talking this show down. It's very well written, and it's, you know, it's very, very good. And I enjoy it a lot. I didn't like this episode. I didn't care for the Las Vegas episode of Picard. You know, I mean, sometimes there's just an episode that just doesn't hit you. But by far, all the other episodes have been excellent.
Yes.
And I am intrigued by the story. So it's working. It's definitely working.
Cool.
Yeah. What'd you think about the new format?
For me, it was hard because I had to like watch the whole thing and think of, is this my favorite scene? Is this my favorite scene? Is this my favorite scene? But I think it makes it easier to discuss at the end. So
what happened was I was actually, I think, 9 episodes behind in my editing. So I spent all day yesterday editing podcasts and listening to one after another. The first one I did was the top 10 episode. Because I wanted to get that one out. And I noticed that we were much more natural and fast moving and a lot less stuff on the top 10, where we were just sort of winging it off of some bare notes, than we were when we were trying to hit every single scene and follow our notes, and we were just distracted, and it was hard to get through. So that's why I thought about doing it this way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it works. I think it's better. I agree. It's better than the scene by scene.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is so the first section, first we do the IMDb recap, right? Then we do a section on just notes. These are just the kind of top of mind things that came through. Then we do the favorite scenes. Then we do the wrap up.
Cool.
That sound?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll give it a try. And I think it'll smooth things out, and it'll make this a lot less like homework too.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I want to thank everybody for joining us. We will talk to you next week for episode 7 of the first season of Star Trek Discovery. I'm Jake McMillan saying good night.
Night, everybody.
Bye.